Well, ladies and gentlemen, the last paper is given by Francesco Del Prato, who is currently a PhD student in economics, networks and business analysis at IMT School for Advanced Studies in Lucca, this beautiful city. And he was formerly a student in at Bocconi University in Milan.
Which is also his
And the paper deals with privatization and competition. And the discussion is Andrea Goldstein, and I will introduce him afterwards. Please, Francesco, go ahead.
So, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is going to be slightly more, let's say, technical. So, please feel free to interrupt me if anything is not that clear. We're talking about privatizations, which I'm sure don't need any kind of advertisement here. You know, privatization, we all know them for lots of considerations about efficiency gains, better management, better running of firms. But what I'm trying to do today is thinking about competition. So what are the effects on competition, and particularly on market openness from privatizations? And this is interesting also because there are different kinds of privatizations. And from the title, we are going to speak particularly about partial privatizations today. My data come from Italy for different reasons. Italy experienced different waves of privatizations, probably never enough, but that's another point. They experienced privatization in different sectors from different governments and for a long run time. And this allows to exploit some heterogeneity of this kind of policy. So the main question is, what is the effect of different kinds of privatizations on the market openness? And I want to introduce partial and full privatization with this image, which is taken from my data. On the left panel, you have partial privatization, which means that the state, the government, is privatizing less than a half of the stake. So the government is maintaining the control over the privatized company. On the right panel, there are full privatizations. So where the control stake is seen, is sold. And what comes immediately to mind looking at this picture is the different distribution. You have here the densities of the two stakes. And you see that when you're partially privatizing, the density of the amount of the stake is very flat. You're really quite indifferent on how much you privatize. But whenever you go to full privatization, it seems you want to privatize it all. So why is it so, and what it has to do with market openness? These kind of questions stays in between different streams of literature in economics and management, of course, as well. And what I'm trying to do here is to taking together some microeconomic consideration that we are going to see in the model in a while, and some other, let's say, industrial organization consideration and empirical phenomenon. For example, related to the efficiency of the optimal quantity of the state to be privatized in the different ways. So, my data comes from a database on MNAs that also accounts for privatization, of course. I have data from privatizations occurred in Italy from 1998 to 2013. And this data set, of course, needed to be cleaned for fake privatization. So all the things that are called privatizations, but they're not, because they are just moving the state from one government-controlled company to another government-controlled company. What I end up with is a data set of 57 full privatizations and 69 partial privatizations. You see written the averages stake, when, but you saw the median stake in the previous image, and you see that for partial privatization, average and median are really close, where the median of full privatization is, of course, 100%. As a measure of market openness, I use the entry rate from Eurostat data, which is simple, the ratio between new companies born in an industry in a certain year with respect to the active companies that year. So what I'm going to perform is an industry per year analysis. So I cluster years and then cluster industries, and I use panel data to exploit the variation. But before going to the econometrics, just a little breakdown of the data, which is interesting in my opinion. You see here partial full privatizations in my data set broken down by years, and what you notice is that many of them have been undertaken by different governments in different periods. It seems that there's been some problem during the crisis, like politics was stopped also in privatizing between 2007, 2009, 2010, and then they came back with Monti's government in 2011. And what is interesting also is the breakdown by industry. So there are different industries that drive privatizations. Sorry for the labeling, but this was the best I could do. You see electrical companies, for example, experience different kind of privatization, both full and private, full and partial. For example, like selling small branches, R&D branches of big state companies, as well as, for example, retail goods and specialized stores, which are drug stores mostly, that experience, for example, more full privatization. So it seems that government really wants to, it's more likely to privatize fully what seems less, let's say, strategical for them, or it may be easier. It's easier to privatize a drugstore rather than a transportation service. So now the first specification to understand what happens when I partially privatize. This is a very standard panel data estimation. I try to go through it in a very simple way. What I'm doing here is just regress the entry rate, so how much the market is open, on the number of full and partial privatization that I've been experiencing 1 year before, 2 years before, 3 years before, and 4 years before. What is interesting is that I can, let's say, account for a lot of endogeneity in this problem with what we call fixed effects. This means that this kind of specification rules out every effect which is fixed for each industry and fixed for each year, and this allows to good, let's say, better identify the effect. And this is what I got. It seems that, considering, for example, the second column, a moving average of the entry rate, as using a moving average, 2 years moving average of the entry rate as a regressor, shows that privatizing partially had a negative effect on the entry rate. And this is somehow interesting because, you know, we always think about privatization with positive effect for competition, positive effect for market openness, but it seems that not ceding the stake arise some microeconomic problem that I'm going to try to solve in the moment. Still, if you see two full privatizations, given that there's something which needs to be explained after 1 year, having the full privatization in the past years has a positive effect, even if it's not statistically significant for now. So in order to better identify the effect and taking into account some literature that shows that it takes some time for the market to receive this kind of shocks, let's say, I try to sum up the privatizations as well. So what is the effect of summing up in subsequent years the privatization on the entry rate? And this effect is even clearer. Partial privatizations lower the entry rate. Each additional partial privatization, for example, as in the year before and the year before again, any additional partial privatization has an average effect of reducing of 0.6 points the entry rate in that industry. So it could be the case that from an econometric standpoint, there is some reverse causality. So it could be the case that the state is experiencing partial privatizations in those sectors that are naturally going down in the entry rate. So how do I account for this problem? I run an even study, it's called. This is a particular study. I don't want to go through the technical part because not that interesting. What is interesting is that it's extremely clear from this graph what's happening. So if you put at zero time the event having a privatization, and you see what happens before and after, you see that partial privatization has a negative effect which is which lasts over time. If it were the case that if it was the case that some reverse causality happened, you should see some pre-trend before the effect. So in the sense that there is something going on in the industry which is independent of the organization. But this is not the case. And even if it is the case, because it's not statistically significant, the pre-trend is the other way around. So it seems that what I'm estimating here is just a lower bound. The effect could be even worse than what comes out. So what is the possible explanation for this behavior? It seems that partially privatizing something constitutes a disincentive for a competitor to enter the market. Why? Because I don't really want to compete with something which is actually state owned. I prefer to, if I'm a competitor, to compete for the stake which is sold rather than directly in the market. Why? Because, of course, a partially privatized company can still rely on all the good or bad help that they can give them in terms of know-how, in terms of possibility to bypass bureaucratic requirements and so on. On the other side, fully privatizing means that the state is no more there. The government is no more controlling the company. And so it could be the case that this incentivates the newcomer or the competitor to enter the market. So I try to build a very simple microeconomic model to try to drive some conclusions about optimal behavior for the government. So suppose that you have a government that wants to sell less than half of the stake of a company. Based on the evidence I show, what happens is that another entrepreneur expects that the government is assuring some advantage of the firm which is half privatized. So he really doesn't want to enter the market. And so the half privatized company remains in monopoly. Okay? The point is that, is it costly for the government to slightly privatize something more while maintaining the control? Yes, it is. Because it reduces the liberty the government has to do its own affairs inside the company. So having the 100% or keeping the 60% of the government is assumed to be different. And you see in the first welfare function, social welfare function, there is a convex cost, which captures the one in green, which captures simply the fact that for a government, for a state which is maintaining the control of the company, is increasingly costly to sell some shares. But once you have passed the golden share, they have the control. Well, the cost is gone. You're no more controlling it. You suffer just the cost which is fixed, which is the cost of letting the control go. So within this very, very simple specification and very classical, I can derive some really easy conclusions which are still insightful. In the case of full partial privatizations, what you care about is having the possibility of, as a government, having the possibility of having some revenues out of the privatizations, as well as how much it costs to reduce your influence inside the company. But when you fully privatize it, you really don't care. Okay, so it's just called a solution. You don't privatize it, or you privatize it all. And this is exactly what we saw in the data at the start point. You remember the densities of the shares, whenever it was full, was this spike at 100%. Still, this model is very simple. And it's very simple because it doesn't take into account the possibility to, whenever you fully privatize something, incentivize the private entrepreneur to do better or worse. So, just for finishing, what happens if I allow the amount of privatized share to have an effect of the effort the buyer is going to extend into the privatized company? This is a very simple model in which the government in time one just announces the privatizations, then it runs a competitive auction in which two companies compete for the stake. Since the privatization is full, the other company, the one which is losing the auction, enters the market, and we are in an oligopoly. But here, there is a decision by the buyer to extend some effort. You can think about this effort, which is very generic in terms of investment in better management, for example, or investment in cost reduction, or something like that, which is now depending on how much the state has retired. And what I get is two interesting facts. First one, the effort, whenever it's profitable, is increasing in privatized amount of shares. So it seems that the more autonomy the firm has, and the better job is the buyer incentivized to do. And the other point is that now the government cares about how much is important for the government itself the utility of the consumer. So in the first specification, the first model, it really doesn't care how much as a government I care about the consumer surplus and the utility of the consumers. But now, if I allow the idea that the government can affect the behavior of the buyer, what happens is that the more the government cares about the utility of the consumer, the more it's going to privatize. So, going back to the start, is Italian government having strong attention on consumers, or is probably not? Has no idea and just seek for immediate short-term revenues? And this is an important point in my opinion, because doing privatization is not enough. You have to do it in the better possible way. Also, not for giving, let's say, instruments for for people that are ideologically opposed to privatization to have something to bring in the state. So that's all. Just to sum up, what I found is that there is empirical evidence that there's a significant negative effect of market openness of partially privatizing firm, whereas there is a positive, still not statistically significant effect of fully privatizing. And whenever privatization is not supposed to affect the behavior of the buyer, this simply reduces to a very simple problem in which what counts is how much cost it is for the state to privatize and how much the state can earn from. And whenever, on the other side, I allow for the private state to influence the private behavior, what happens is that it counts how much the state looks towards having revenues or having a better utility for the consumers. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Francesco. The discussion is Andrea Dorstein. He is senior economist at the OECD, the investment division, and it's in Paris.
Which happens also to be a beautiful city, another one, they are all beautiful cities. So let me start, is this working?
Yeah.
Let me start by thanking Alberto and Carlo for this invitation. It's the first time probably that I work on a Sunday morning at least in a public company. It's the first time that I swim in mid-October, so for this I'm also thankful. And it's definitely the first time ever that I received toilet paper in the white package. So it's a great set of firsts. Let me congratulate Francesco for his excellent paper, and by the way also for the excellent presentation he made. It was very much into the tight schedule that he was granted. And let me make a few points and a few remarks. Can you hear me? I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Okay, this is better. And it's an interesting paper, first of all, because obviously it talks about a very important topic. I'm not so sure about his characterization of saying that there's very little literature on privatization and competition. There is actually a lot of literature on that, I guess, which doesn't mean that his approach, your approach, is not new, but I guess there is a lot of literature, so you may want to refer more generally to that literature. I think it's excellent because obviously it's very much in line with Bruno Leone thinking about prosperity, health, and happiness, and also about the future of the economic system. And I also think it's very important, I will return to this, because there is a lot of literature on varieties of capitalism, and there is obviously also a lot of literature on varieties of privatization capitalism, and I think this is an excellent contribution to the debate, even if it's focused on Italy, but I will return to the specifics of Italy. Obviously, one can think of repeating the exercise, once you have the modern base, you can repeat the exercise for the other 193 countries of the UN, and possibly the 208, I think, which are FIFA members. Even more significant set of countries. I have some editing suggestions which I will pass on to you. I think maybe there are two major suggestions, but not additions. The first is you may wish to look at particularly one paper by Bortolat and Fancher in the Review of Financial Studies 2004, which is called Reluctant Privatization, which is very much on this topic of partial privatization. So the issue. It's from a financial economics point of view, so it's more about understanding why governments decide to sell even set of shares and not the whole company. But it's obviously very important in a way as the precondition for the choice that the government makes, and that leads to a number of outcomes in terms of market entry. The second suggestion, I think, is on the paper itself, but also actually the presentation where we discuss this. You have the evidence first and modeling afterwards. I modeled it shouldn't be, it's the usual way. I mean, it doesn't mean that it has to be always that way, but I think it's usually the modeling that leads to the economic analysis. So you may wish to reconcile these two things. I also think it's an interesting paper because obviously coming from the OECD, the OECD has been a very important player in this debate about the state ownership first and privatization later. By the way, yesterday Dave Anderson's name was mentioned. Dave Anderson spent time with the OECD. He was, I think, chief statistician. So obviously he played a role also in this debate more generally about the appropriate level of government intervention in the economy. So obviously it's important the contribution of the OECD because it's led to a number of exercises in terms of better understanding the different conditions of privatization around the world. And there's a whole set of organization networks, activity studies and guidelines on the corporate governance data and the prices that have been produced by the OECD, but also because there's a lot of work at the OECD on this interface between competition and privatization, and competition and the government ownership. And there's actually one colleague here who is one of the author of the famous private market regulator regulation indicators of the OECD, the PMR, which again, in fact, also looks at privatization as one of the indicators, but also is useful to understand the loops between privatization and competition. I have a few doubts about your characterization, historical characterization. I think this is of course a part of the paper that you didn't present, but I think it's useful in the paper itself. Well, obviously it's very difficult to write a historical overview of privatization in, I don't know, I guess it's 900 characters. But I think it's important to be a bit more precise. Let me just mention a couple of things. Obviously, there are very huge differences if you look in terms of countries, obviously, regions more general, but also in terms of industries, in terms of the political economy of privatization, in terms of the modes of privatization, in terms of the timing of privatization, in terms of the internationalization of privatization itself, in terms of ownership, in terms of influence of other governments, in terms of influence of other governments' decisions, obviously. Pool of money available for privatization is only one. I think it's also important to distinguish that, again, it's not so important in the paper itself, but I think it's important to be precise once you decide to have. For instance, obviously, in France, and we have a number of French friends here, in France, the Chirac government in 1986, 1988 privatized, and that was influenced by the British experience, but obviously it was very different because most of the companies that were privatized in 1986-1988 had been nationalized in 1981. And they were nationalized for reasons that were completely different from the reasons that led to nationalization in other countries, because France was different, but also because 1981 was very different from 1944 when the British government nationalized, or 1930s when the Mussolini government nationalized. So it's important to recognize the differences. Also, you mentioned, I think it's a very important experience, that of Chile. Now, the Chile experience is very important for also two additional reasons that I'm not here. One, of course, is that it was very contentious internationally because it was an privatization wave implemented by a very authoritarian regime, but also because it was also part of, so this is on the political side, but also in terms of the technicalities, it was the first mass privatization that saw a very important role of private pension funds. In fact, you refer to American investment, it was not very important American investment, but what was very important was it was the first attempt to establish people's capitalism outside of the UK, which okay, of course had a long history of state and private ownership of shares, and also ownership of shares, where it's in Chile, it was none, so it was very international. I think it's not an important part of the paper, but I think it also, once you decide to have it, it's important. Another suggestion, again, also, I guess it's very difficult from the economic point of view or the empirical point of view, but I guess I would suggest you to be more specific. Your unit of analysis is companies. But by definition, many privatizations, especially but not only partial privatizations, are implemented in waves. So, like in the case of Eni or Enel, I think there were six, or there was an IPO, but then there were a number of subsequent offers to the public. And I think it's important to distinguish between the deals, because obviously that allows you to have, in fact, more observations, so it may also be useful instrumental in terms of the econometric implementation. There is also another related issue, which is that obviously even a company which is 100% private, maybe private because there is one controlling shareholder holding all the shares, there may be a coalition of different, especially in the so-called coalition capitalism, maybe a group of different shareholders that own their shares, or even if there are a few cases in Italy, but there are many elsewhere, it may become a public company with a dispersed ownership of shares. And obviously that has a very important implication in terms of the principal agent relationship within the firm. Another point, I guess, which I think is important to mention, which you mentioned in passing, especially when talking about what you call drug stores, that we call that pharmacists, which is this whole municipal privatization, municipal capitalism, municipal. In Italy, there are different from other countries where state ownership is important. There are many local authorities that own shares in companies that are active in the market. Some of them are actually in competitive markets, like selling drugs. Others are not, like in the public transport, where initially at least there were local public monopolies, and which So I think it's important also to look at this because this has implications. Obviously, you have to accept that, but I think that to discuss a bit the specificities of industries is important. And this also because obviously it's a two-way street between competition and privatization. And I think, again, you mentioned the case of the electricity market, which is opened up in connection with privatization, and that obviously led to the entry of competitors to Enel, but also to the diversification of Enel into other markets. Recently in Italy, as you know, we had the strategy of the Morandi bridge that collapsed in Genoa, and that led to a number of, well, that's called an invasion, but I don't think it's that important term, but anyway. And obviously, that's the case where the private owner operates in a regulated environment, but with competition. There's no competition for the market, there's no competition in the market. So obviously, there are issues again. From the community point of view, it's perfect, but I think when you then discuss the policy environment in which you make your conscience simple. And again, also on the reverse of causality, it's important to be reminded that the government may decide to protect the companies where there is a high pool of privatized companies in markets, in sectors, where there is a high chance of market entry. So there is, again, automatic, it's something that the debate is not. Finally, I think that this is very important, and you may wish to refer to it in non-ideological terms, obviously, but still it's important because there's a whole debate about the future of privatization and the future of state ownership. Now, as you know, the Italians, some of you know for sure, but also the visitors that have the pleasure of being in this beautiful country, in this very days that I talk about nationalizing the state, the privately owned by nobody, in fact, the national line, Alitalia. And which is interesting per se because it proves that the debate is still on. The fight is long. I mean, I'm not personally, leaving aside the Italian case, I'm not always in favor of privatization. I think that the state may have a role as a policy, but in the case of Italia, I have many doubts, and we had a long discussion with Trump in particular. And I think you may wish to refer to that in the previous week now, obviously, so you don't have to make comments on the paper that may become old by the time it's published, but the fact that the debate goes on, and the fact that the role of the state and the role of the government in the economy is still a very important issue of debate in Italy, but as you know, in the UK as well, and obviously the example of the Chinese market socialism is another one which is very influential. So the debate continues, and the angle from which you tackle the issue is an important one, it's an innovative one, so you may wish to add to the political policy this relevance of the paper by referring to the debate on this. And on this note, I congratulate you on the paper. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Voltin.
Thank you very much for this very useful suggestion. I'm aware of some of the things you pointed out. First of all, I skipped this slide just for time purposes, but I'm rebuilding the model in order to have a fully structural model in industrial organization as the barriers. So treating the presence of the state inside a certain industry as an entry barrier. And this could, let's say, keep the things together, as you were suggesting. Regarding the most problematical part, with, for example, golden shares and the fact that weights are driving privatizations, this is certainly a point. Still, fixed effects account for a part of this issue, because usually ways of privatizations, for example, are typical of some industries, and this is captured by the fixed effect. So probably what I need to do is try to exploit some other data sets, and which are maybe more rich in some sense, also about the structure of the companies that are privatized, and use them to add controls to the operation. Thank you.
Thanks. Now it's time for questions. Carlo.
thank you. Great paper and very interesting subject. I had a few comments and suggestions on how to improve the model. First of all, I'm a little bit skeptical about the idea of using entry rate as a proxy for competition. You can have closed markets with very high entry rates. For example, if you look in Italy at the postal market, in the post service, you have an unbelievable entry rate and then a few thousands of market operators, except that only one accounts for 90-something percent of the market. So you have basically 2,000 operators fighting with each other for 2% of the market, and you can see a very high turnover among them, which is not clearly a proxy for market opening. So I would rather use some more complex indicators, such as the product market regulation from the OECD, except that you should modify it and change it to take out from the indicator privatization related to some indicator. But that's something you can do pretty much easily because the OECD makes every sub-indicator available, so you just take it out. My second point is that I think it would be nice to put it also like a dummy variable or something like that to account for whether regulatory reform came before or after privatization. I expect it to be very significant, especially in the case of partial privatization. Third question, actually, I wonder whether fixed effects can actually capture all of the consequences of the physical dimension of the market. When you're talking pharmacies, you're talking about basically local markets whose dimension is more or less that of the city where the pharmacy is active. When you're talking electricity, you're by and large talking about the national market. That may make some difference on top of the fact that, like in pharmacies, by definition you have no entry rate because the number of pharmacies operating within a given geographical area is regulated top down. And finally, one powerful argument I think in favor of privatization or nationalization and against partial privatization is that when you're talking competition, you are talking product market competition, which is what the PMR indicator captures, but you're also talking about markets for factors. When you have partial privatization, you're basically, in reality, ruling out that there is any contendibility, any contestability of the actual control of the company, because the investment decision of the state of the government is usually not based on economic incentives, it's based on decisions. One way to look at this is to look at the likelihood of a failure of a partially privatized company, which is virtually zero, as opposed to the likelihood of a failure of a totally privatized company, which is higher than zero, however small. Alitalia is a case in point. Alitalia, after its privatization, went bankrupt and failed. ATA is in a worse situation than Alitalia, but it's not going to fail anytime soon, even though if it was a private firm, it would be, Chapter 11, Italy's version of Chapter 11, a few years ago. So that's something I don't clearly have in mind how you could account for this point in your model, but this is something you should somehow, I think, keep in mind, at least in the part of your paper where you describe the results and comment and interpret the results of the model.
Yes,
okay. So thank you very much, Pablo. Let me say, regarding what you were suggesting about entry rate, many different measures of competition and market openness are possible.
again, fixed effect should take into account for many of the things you said. Also because, you know, the problem is that saturating a lot of the regression could come up with other problems. Okay, so adding lots of controls in dynamic panel, not dynamic, in panel data regressions, whenever you have two-way clustering fixed effects that they have, and that counts also for clustering at standard error, so this allows lots of variability to exploit, could come up with some noise, and some, for example, linearity problems. Still, for sure, trying with other measurements of macro totalness is an exercise that must be done, both from a classification as a classification test or just for stress in the model. Thanks for the regulatory reform dummy, because it's an idea that I haven't thought about, and it's really interesting. Maybe we can discuss later about particular these things. So. And yes, I need some more discussion probably around regulated markets. So I would also integrate some dummy specific. I mean, again, this is a problem of econometrics. So I had to add this to the discussion. But adding a market which is regulated or not is still fixed effect actually. So. Yeah, because it is a time invariant characteristic of the industry. So for sure it needs to be taken into account in the discussion. I have to think about how to take into account this econometrically.
Other questions?
There is literature on the comparison of the concepts of prioritization as well, which means I have the impression that you have a simple assumption that an auction is taken into consideration for prioritizing. But for example, in Eastern European countries, we have very, very different concepts here. Why do I say that? Because the different concepts did have an impact on the competition as well. In the first, not only in the first, but also in the second and third rounds, as I thought. And so I think that would be worthwhile consideration. And I think you would be more explicit about the timeline which you consider.
Oh, sorry?
The timeline which you consider for the effects of the on the competition.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, this is one down.
Okay, about the timeline I use, for example, in the end study, what is right now quite classical in the literature about this kind of econometric approaches, which is a 7 years window. You see, 3 years before the year of the event and 3 years after. Even studies which are specification like these are typical from finance literature. So using this kind of methods in, for example, industrial organization or political economy or labor economy, for example, is a quite recent exercise, and some literature is building up to decide whether the time window, the appropriate time window which is the optimal size of the time window. And this depends, of course, on what you're looking at. So I think for this exercise to mostly recent literature consensus about the time window to consider.
And then I think it would be good to have an assumption. You look at Italy only, is the concept of competition one of an open market economy, or is it the closed Italian economy? How do you think that is also important to be considered?
Luca.
Well, congratulations first on your outstanding presentation. I would like to bring your discussion, your framework to banking and privatizations in banking. First, I would note that there are many studies on developing countries, Southeastern Asia, for example, Indonesia, Philippines, which acknowledge that partial privatizations actually have a detrimental, an incremental effect on banks' risk taking, for people's shareholders having a stake still in the hands of the government, for instance, by a golden share, they do not exert the due control upon banking managers' risk taking, and therefore there is such an aggressive approach to banking activities in these countries where partial privatization in banking has been pursued. But coming to Italy, I would like to ask whether do you think that the significant concentration in terms of the degree of market competition in banking has been related to the reforms enacted during the 90s, first a partial privatization by means of the creation of the banking foundation still anchored to a public model in 1990 by the Amato-Carli law, and then a full privatization when foundations became themselves private entities, private institutions, but also were bound exclusively to social services and public activities, leaving all the core banking activity to the private entity, which had been born in the, by means of the 1990 law. Thanks.
So thank you. This is interesting. I have to say I didn't consider banking by choice. So banking is a difficult object to deal with, especially in Italy, and for the problem related to the connection between things that look to be private but really are not. So I have to say it would, if I can't remember, whether it was a few observations about banking and I decided to not take them into account, just not to add noise to the model. But still, probably it would be interesting to have something which is dedicated to the so-called privatizations of banking foundations in Italian case, and this would be really an interesting sector to exploit and to investigate.
Alright, other questions?
Thank you. I'm coming from Eastern Europe, and I think that this was important to comment on this, that there is a big experience with privatization in Eastern Europe, and once Milton Friedman said that we needed privatization after 20 years, he said we needed private property rights. This means that when you privatize, the most important thing is not efficiency, but how good is the market, how free is the market, how easy to get to the market, how free is the trade, international trade. But on this research, I think very important is, from our experience, is that not the most important is not efficiency of the privatized companies, but what's important goal is that government is going out from this sector. For instance, when I'm a private person selling something, I don't care about efficiency of the something which is already in the hands of the other person. But if you start thinking about efficiency or other goals, after that you have one goal that the government is going out. But then you can have lots of political or economic discussions for what is better, which way is better, etc., etc. And then with the same calculations, some people can have their variables, some people can have their data, and they will easily manipulate and contradict to you that you have your figures out of mind. So my way of the privatization is better and yours is wrong. So our experience ended with this, that it's better to privatize for one thing, that government is going out from that sector. And then the market will be thinking how to use these resources better and who will be the better user, who will be the better owner of these resources, and if there is a chance to monopolize, for instance, there will be open market, and others will be coming to find you in that market, and that's all. So this is the outcome of our experience of entire group of many countries, ex-communist countries, and I think this is very important also to make more research about those countries, because there's a huge number of papers written about this. Thank you.
About these countries and presentation, I think Greg and with me, there's a tons of literature also from OECD and institutional economists. What you're referring to, I think, is in some sense an endogeneity problem. So you have that having the government out is, I mean, it increases efficiency, but these two things are highly related. So I think that, you know, you can look at different measures again. For example, you could try to look at innovation. Does the government or letting the government out from an industry have an effect on innovation of that industry, for example? Of course, all these measures are highly endogenous one to the other. So the presence of the government is what drives different kind of evaluations. So
I think obviously Eastern Europe is a completely different story. I think what is addressing in the paper by Francesco is attempted to link the country to a particular dimension of globalization, which is a state, so, as opposed to the general point about globalization in one country, or globalization in competition in general. No, and I think that is what is innovative in the paper, especially again if good consideration is given to the variety of globalization experiences, even within the same country, which in this case is either, but this is probably true for many other countries.
The last question, yes.
I think that there is also another possible way of considering and changing the kind of dual to you present day, to you, what you have chosen to develop, investigate. Instead of partial privatization, look at the partial ownership. Why does the government want the government to keep the partial ownership? And if you say that, it's obvious that it can be only for affecting competition. For instance, for affecting, maybe not directly, but to restrict the number of strategies that you can engage in if you want to compete. For instance, to protest lawyers or employees and so on. Or also to avoid to use a golden share. Because let's look, for instance, at in the case of the entertainment plan. You restrict competition because you say, no, I want to keep 30%. You do what you want. That directly reduces the number of companies which might be interested, especially in some other. Even more than you, in this case, keep a partial ownership in order to say, I want a certain type of governance, I want a public company. That's also a restriction of competition. There is another issue that you probably didn't, I don't see, no, you have considered, that with the influence of the presence of the government, even as a partial owner, to be competitive to the strategies of the competitor. Because if you are against, if you are competing with a company where the state has keeps a partial ownership, in a way, you are competing with the state. And if you are competing with the state, you can ask yourself, what is the best strategy for me? Is to compete or is to cooperate? I use that using the word cooperative in the sense that was used yesterday when we were, Carol was talking about the Baptist and bootleggers. Is it better if you are competing with the state? Is it better for you to become again a Baptist or to be a bootlegger as you should do it in the perfect position? Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. This is exactly the point, especially the latter one. I mean, the assumption of the model is that since you're not privatizing at all, you really prefer to participate to the revenues of the state, which is in some sense stays with the state. So why do we have to try to get in the market and compete directly with something which is owned by the state, when I can try to compete for the state, the legal state which is privatized, and then participate to the revenues of something which is state-owned? So this is exactly, maybe it wasn't clear because it was a little bit fast, but this is one of the assumptions of the model, exactly, this exact point.
So, well, thank you very much. Thanks a lot to the speaker and the discussant.